Hi, this is Rowan Campbell. I play Farley Mason on the Haunting Melissa sequel Dark Hearts, and you are listening to A Dark Companion.
This is Zero, and you're listening to A Dark Companion, a Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts podcast. We've got another special episode for everybody out there. Guest, could you introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rowan Campbell. I play Farley Mason on Haunting Melissa Dark Hearts.
Yes, that's right. We've got Farley, and we're going to find out all about his experience working with Neil and Hook Digital Media and everybody on the crew and making that movie.
Yeah.
So how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Excellent. Very excited about this.
Yeah, me too.
So we were talking a little bit earlier, and you have kind of a unique perspective when it comes to this movie, because you've not actually seen much of it.
No, I have not. I'm actually on Samsung, so I don't have the opportunity to watch the final product of the show. So my experience goes to script work and set experience and talking with Neil and a few other actors on set.
Oh, yes. And so you've listened to the other episodes of this podcast, and I expect that you've probably seen a lot of our speculation and stuff online. What do you think about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I have. I listened to a lot of speculation on my sort of built-in story in the story itself, because when you look at Farley, it's kind of a story within a story.
Right.
And it's just really cool to see what everybody got from the story. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
I don't know how much you, based on, you know, just doing the script work and talking to Neil, and how much of the bigger story did you really feel like you had a grasp on?
I think, I'm trying to think of a way to put it into words. Being the character that I got, which I couldn't ask for a better character, because I get a look at the story through Farley's eyes.
Right.
So what I saw is what I know. And it's really, really interesting when I talk to Neil and this poor Farley kid. He's just a normal kid on the block with a slight spying issue, I guess you could say.
Yeah, definitely.
This poor kid gets thrown into a world of chaos. And I guess what me and Neil talked about was approaching a spectator or narration position with this character.
Right.
He goes through what he's seen and what he speculates is happening, because he's seen a lot from his bedroom window. Of course, he knows about Melissa, and later on in the story, what appears to be Dora the Explorer, as you call it. Top Terry. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Awesome.
He gets introduced to all these crazy events and crazy characters. But like I said, he's an innocent kid with a heart of gold. He's just looking out for this girl that he's in love with.
Right.
Yeah. Mm. Which is a very cool perspective to be thrown into, especially with content like this, because when I first read the script, I couldn't get enough of it. So it was an incredible, incredible role to be a part of this production.
Well, in the beginning, how did you find out about this project, or how did you being involved come about?
I I'm originally from Calgary. I'm located in Vancouver now. But when I was out in Calgary, you don't get a lot of production swinging through there. So I basically got a call from my agent saying to go out and audition for the role of Farley, which was originally cast in two parts.
Okay.
Because as you know, when he's showing the footage that he had taken earlier in his life, he's aged a bit.
Right.
So that was originally cast. I think it was Farley at 25 and Farley at 15 or 16. So I went into the room reading for Farley at 16, which is the bedroom sequences. The sort of narration thing came in the callback with Neil, where that was the first time I actually met Neil, and we just talked it out, the story as well as the character. So basically, yeah, I went through an audition process and I got the call from, I think Rhonda Fizeki, the casting director, said you got the role. So I was originally thinking I'd get Farley at 16, but I guess they decided to cast me for both roles. Yeah. Which was really cool.
It definitely worked.
Yeah, I hope so.
Do you have plans for finding a way to watch this movie since you haven't seen it yet?
Sorry?
Do you have plans on finding a way to actually finally get to watch this movie since you haven't seen it yet?
My roommates actually got an iPad, so we were going to download it and watch it all.
Awesome.
Which I can't wait to do. Because it sounds ridiculous that I haven't seen it, but I've honestly been so busy that you just don't really get the time to do it, which is a pain in the ass for me. Because I hear nothing but good things about it, so.
Yeah, it's amazing. That's why I'm doing this podcast, because I like it so much.
Yeah. It's awesome what you're doing, by the way.
Thank you very much.
It's incredibly rewarding for everybody who's involved in the production.
Thank you. You heard the Tom Carey episode. Do you have anything from your time on set? Did you take anything away from that?
Oh, poor Neil. I actually, the day I was leaving set, the wardrobe lady, what was her name? Tom gave the name. She's an incredibly nice lady. She handed me the shirt from Farley's bedroom sequence, the orange shirt.
Nice.
The robot shirt, yeah. So I'm wearing that right now.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, so I sort of snuck off set with the shirt.
Well, speaking of Tom, what was it like working with him, especially in character, especially towards the later chapters of the movie?
Yeah, he's actually my acting coach in Calgary.
Oh, wow.
So I was incredibly just so excited to finally work with him, because that was the first time we worked together. And the amount of depth that man goes into character is extraordinary. I think he was walking around set for 2 hours before we filmed the empty mansion scene, getting his character walked down, coughing out loud. It was so cool to watch him do what he does. Wow. Working with his character is absolutely terrifying.
I bet.
Is when you're in the scene with somebody that's that great of an actor, it kind of sucks you into the real story, if that makes any sense.
Sure, like, definitely. When
you're living it, it's an experience, which is what I look for as an actor, is to go through an experience. And especially on the table sequence, that was one of the craziest things I've ever filmed. I had so much fun that day.
Yeah, that looked pretty intense.
Yeah, it was. I was very lucky to have Tom behind me.
You know, I gotta say, I really like the fact that the whole community of people involved in this movie, you know, that you guys kind of all know each other. Because I didn't.
Yeah, I think it shows. I think it totally shows. Because when you're working with people that you know personally, it gives you a sort of drive to prove, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. And it's just incredible to be on set with people that you've know from around town or you've worked with or you're desperate to work with. And you got to applaud Neil for walking into Calgary and saying, why not hire Calgarian actors? Why fly people in? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But I totally think it shows because I think everybody knows everybody and nobody's pressured to do anything extraordinary, and that relaxes people on set.
Absolutely. I definitely agree with that. I mean, you've got, you know, Cassia, and she had the same parents in Mary In-Laws as she did in Haunting Melissa and Dark Hearts. And, you know, before we did the podcast, you know, Jake Church was putting out messages on Twitter to listen to it, and you said that was your roommate.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked him up.
We're actually out in Vancouver now.
I looked him up, and, you know, then he was in Brokeback Mountain with Tom Carey. Like, it all kind of ties together.
Yeah, it's a very tight-knit community, for sure.
Yeah.
Very, very tight-knit community.
You could tell how comfortable everybody was with each other, and, like, it really came across, for sure.
Well, that's really good. That's what we were hoping for, I think. Yeah. It's just, you gotta, like, again, you just gotta applaud Neil for coming into Calgary and putting all his trust in us. And I mean, I say that, but everybody here is working actors, and everybody on the show is really, really good at what they do. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And for Neil to come in and say, here's a production, let's go, it's such a cool thing that he did and put the show together. And it's just awesome. The script was incredible, too, when I first read it.
Yeah. What was your first impressions of that?
When I first read through the script, I couldn't stop flipping pages. Like, it got to the point where I was, like, skimming pages to figure out what was happening next. You know, like, yeah. The script itself is so intense. It's like reading a really, really good horror book.
Really?
Yeah, it's a really good script. Of course, when I went into the audition, I didn't know what was going to happen to Farley throughout the episodes. So when I finally got to the page where I think it was chapter 20-something was the mansion sequence. When I first got to that page, I kind of just freaked out and, like, stood up and, like, looked around the room. I was like, what? I got to do this? No way. That was my favorite day on set, for sure.
Well, that particular scene, it's brought up a lot of questions because there are other people in that room that we don't know.
Yes,
So you're trying to figure out, like, okay, well, are these other people that have been in similar situations, or, you know, who the heck are these people? And we still don't really understand exactly who the old hag is, Edna Poser. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, where did she come from? What is her purpose in this whole thing?
You know, I would love to tell you, but as Farley, he's thrown into this place, and you can imagine what he's going through from the viewer's perspective. Do you know what I mean? Because there's all these people. You don't have a clue who they are or what their intentions are.
Yeah.
And I think the most powerful part of that scene is when Farley sees Melissa, whom he still thinks he's going to save him in a way.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So when he first sees her, he's like, oh my God, please help me. And then the whole scene shifts when, well, whatever happens.
Right.
And
right.
All these people in the room, Farley has no idea who they are or what they're doing there.
Hmm.
And I find Farley's basically a viewer, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, definitely.
He's totally got your guys' perspective watching the show.
Yeah, I've kind of thought of both Farley and Emma as kind of representing us. And
yeah,
so
for sure.
Seeing your face when you look up and you see Melissa, and there's that moment that we'd all have of, oh shit, it's Melissa, and then help me out, and then it not going that way. You totally could connect with that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it makes it a human experience for the people watching the show as well as it does for Farley. And it's so easy to act out the scene when the content's that good.
Right.
And of course, when Melissa walks in that room, it's such a powerful, powerful moment for the viewers and for Farley. And it kind of brings the viewers into the show as to what you would do in that situation.
Absolutely. And
what would happen, which again is the genius of Neil bringing in that sort of writing and that sort of production.
I agree completely.
Yeah. But yeah, Farley and Emma really, really have the viewer's perspective on what's going around.
Yeah, because I mean, Farley's a regular person and Emma is as well, but she's also running around with this iPad and she's watching the information that Farley put out, which is basically what we did with Haunting Melissa. And,
yeah.
You know, and she's trying to put all the pieces together and Farley's trying to find the truth. And apparently the truth is a problem. And it's what they feed the beast.
Yeah, no kidding. And yeah. Emma always seems to be one step behind where she needs to be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Watching Emma's, because I've seen a few clips of Emma's stuff in the show. And yeah, she's totally Farley in a way. She's the second Farley.
Right.
That's where the fear she must have when she sees what happens to Farley. And where would she go after that, after seeing something like that?
Right.
Where does that leave her? Because Farley's desperately, desperately trying for somebody to help him. Because let's face it, what he's saying is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And what he's doing is, I don't want to say immoral when he's filming a teenage girl across the street.
It's questionable.
When you first open that footage, you're going to be like, oh, this kid's crazy. Why is he filming a girl across the street? But Emma really, really, really digs into it. And she's invested so much of her time because it's just so mesmerizing to see this kid go through all of that. And then in the end, what is it for? Because there's the hard drive scene. Yeah. Where Mr. Fedora does what he does, and that leaves Farley completely gone from history.
Right.
He ceased to exist at that point. So this poor kid has gone through so much, and it would seem for not that much.
Yeah, just because he saw strange things happening across the street, and because he cares about this girl. And he just got himself thrown into a way bigger mess than he could have imagined.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's kind of like its own sort of little love story that led into chaos because, you know, it's Haunting Melissa.
Sure.
Yeah. But, I mean, Megan, who played Jane, that was really, really fun. The scene where she comes into my bedroom and just unloads all of that information on me.
Yeah.
And of course, being who I am, I record the whole thing.
Naturally.
Yeah, naturally, of course. Yeah. And then what follows that when she goes across the street and you get that shot of the house from window to window. And
yeah, that was super intense.
Yeah, that was even on set, man. That was wow. Yeah,
because we first saw Jane in the scene in the church with the coffin, and I mean, you really didn't. You knew obviously this girl died, and you don't know how or anything about it. And when everything kind of came together, when she went back across the street, that was pretty serious.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, as the actor, when you're trying to portray what that would feel like, you got to run through the history of what me and Jane had.
Right.
And then I feel like it hits the viewers as well, because they go through everything that they've seen.
Absolutely.
And it just sort of all falls into a terrible mess as she walks across the street back to her home. So on and so forth.
Yeah. And none of it because of anything she's done. Something about a deal her parents made with Fedora that somehow led to her doing that.
Yeah. Innocent people thrown into a very, very terrible victim position.
Right.
Because we've done nothing wrong. But this, you know, I think Neil said something on set. Trouble in Paradise was something he said when we were shooting the across the street to the video of Jane's mother drinking away. He turned to me and he said, "Trouble in Paradise." And I that was kind of just like a small sort of joke thing, but for me it was like, wow, because this is total suburbia. Could have a great life, but then it's just thrown, that somebody throws a wrench in the works and it all hits, you know, it's just terrible. It all crashes down on them.
Yeah, and it's nothing that anybody involved outside of Fedora could have expected. I would love to know how the Lancasters found out about Fedora, or that they could make some kind of deal to fix their problems. Because there's a lot going on behind all of that that I'm very, very curious about. But
yeah,
hopefully we'll find out in the future.
I mean, there's only so many questions you can ask, Neil. Because I think Tom said something about Greg Lawson, too. And, you know, you start to ask Neil 1,000 questions on set, there's only so many he can answer, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
And for me, too, it's like, where do you find a man like Fedora the Explorer walking down the street?
Yeah.
Where does that man come from? And why is he doing what he's doing?
Well, one angle is he can sense your desperation and he comes to you.
Yeah, exactly. He could be like that, because it's a... I mean, they're having a terrible, terrible time until he comes. So are his intentions terrible, or are they good, or is he feeding off the weak?
Yeah.
What is he up to?
And where the heck did he get little Adam?
Oh, my God. Adam, man.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that backyard and the shack and the shed and all that stuff, but go ahead.
Yeah. Cash. Little Cash played Adam.
Yeah.
And that was just, it was like perfectly cast. He was just such a scary little kid, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that walk he did across the yard, everything he did in the window, I mean, he definitely plays creepy very well.
Yeah, he sure does. Very stoic sort of, he's, you know, it hit a point for me where I was watching him do things off camera, because I watched them film a lot of his stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was like, is he human? you know, because
I can't say I didn't wonder that.
Because he does things, and you're like, what are you? What are you doing?
And
especially in the shed, because I mean, when Farley walks in there, holy shit!
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. That shed. I think it was chapter 17. I think.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say, because it was so... That was pretty
crazy.
The shed
sequence, yeah.
And what is that thing in there? And did they just have a guy in a twig suit? Like, I haven't even bothered asking Neil that. Just been wondering.
Yeah, there was. I mean, they got, for the man in the suit question, there was a guy on set. He threw on all that stuff. He was sat there waiting for me to walk in there.
That must have been fun for him.
Yeah, I mean, for sure it was. We shot that all... Oh, no, we didn't, because when I first go into the shed, it's daytime. The other stuff we shot at night. But that shed, and I mean, what Neil threw in there with the writing and the robot and
the little doll,
pieces of meat, and...
Yeah.
Man, I first walked in there and I was like, this is disgusting. Man. You're wrong. You're a raunchy dude. What's going on in here? Wow. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah.
Now, actually, for that scene, one of the people in our little Twitter group was actually there for some of the filming of that.
Oh, yes.
Shauna?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yes, we actually talked on set.
So jealous. Need to
I mean, there's nothing, you can't be that jealous, because we gave them absolutely no information about the show. They just stood around and tried to figure out what the hell was going on.
Yeah,
Because you know Neil, he likes
to he's very mysterious.
Yeah. I remember actually in the callback room, I mean, Neil is just an incredibly nice guy, but in the callback room, he's a very tall guy. And when we were doing, because, you know, when you're in the callback room, he'll start giving you direction on what he wants to see and everything else. Mm-hmm. He was stood over top of me, and I was sat in a chair. Couldn't help but feel just terrified. not really of him, but, like, he's such a – his brain works so fast, you know? You just got to keep up on your own got to try at least.
Yeah,
but he loves being mysterious, which I mean, being an actor and being part of this production is absolutely so rewarding because you get so much feedback and it raises so many questions. And if you take a step a certain way or smile a certain way, all of a sudden you get thousands of viewers going, wait, what is his intentions, what's going on there? You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I'm still obsessing about a slight kind of a smile that Greg does at the end of one of the chapters.
Oh, yes. You talked about that with Tom, correct?
Yeah. And
Yeah. Every
time I watch it, I can't – I'm like, is he smiling? Is he not smiling? I don't know. But and I keep going back and forth, but I feel like it has to mean something.
Yeah. I mean, Greg's a super – intentional actor as well, if that helps you.
Yeah,
I think Tom said something about that. I mean, he's a really strong actor, and for him to do something on camera, it usually means something.
Yeah, and it's so subtle that I my eyes keep deceiving me about whether or not it really even happened.
Oh, that's crazy.
I don't even know what to do about it because, like, is it there? Because the first time when it was first pointed out to me, I absolutely saw it, but then ever since then, I'm not sure.
You're not too sure about it.
And you can't be sure of anything with this, you know, dynamic story elements and all of the mystery that's built into this.
Yeah, totally. You can never be sure. That's the creepiest part about this.
There's always
you never actually know.
Right. So, Pixel Face, as we called him,
in Farley. Pixel Face.
Yeah. That's all we had to go on. It was like his face is made of pixels. His Pixel Face.
Pixel Face, yeah.
So, and maybe I'm all confused about timing on this thing. So, you came on just for Dark Hearts. So.
Yes.
Yeah, so I don't know who, I guess I could probably look that up, but yeah, who played that role?
In the first one, the found footage sort of blurry. I honestly have no idea who played it. I think that was a question I asked Neil on set, but obviously forgot. Because there's pixelated stuff in this one.
Right.
For example, when he's in his dad's warehouse and he stands up and then moves to the desk.
Which is a great reveal.
Yeah. Neil was so excited about that one on set. So was I, though. That was fun.
One of my favorite shots.
I don't know who did it in the first one, but I have no idea.
Okay, yeah. And he put, because on the table in front of you when you're on the couch before it switches over, there's like an apple and a soda can, I think.
Yep.
Which eventually led one of us to realize, wait a minute, that's an indication, because you can see those same things in those pixel shots, and suddenly made sense, it's the same person.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because it's sitting just in the right spot that when you switch cameras, it's just over to the side, and completely tipped us off that there was some shenanigans going on.
Shenanigans, yes. Yeah, I mean, I sat down to do, I think it was 4 pages of dialogue that day on the sofa. So I was sat there for a while, and I didn't even pick up on that one. Congrats to whoever picked that up.
I want to say it was probably at Nambo Parfro. I'm going to give him the credit, and someone correct me on Twitter if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure it was him. Yeah, because, I mean, yeah, we've gone really far with it, figuring out the little hidden alphabet that's in the movie.
Yep. Yep.
It just, you know, so many levels of very, very interesting stuff.
It's forever dissectable.
Yeah, and we're all hoping there's going to be some more.
So am I. Yeah, I mean, this is just an incredible project to be part of once, but, you know, another opportunity I'd jump on for sure.
Well, go ahead.
It's just so good. It's, you know, script's awesome. The set experience was extremely rewarding. And like we talked about earlier, working with everybody from Calgary's awesome. And it doesn't happen that often.
Very, very true. Yeah. I mean, in this kind of non-traditional kind of movie, or I don't know what term I'm looking for, but how does it compare your time on set? How does it compare with other projects you've been in before?
The type of shooting, or just
kind of everything about it. Just what, you know, can you compare it to the way things went on other sets? Was there a noticeable difference?
Well, first of all, with Haunting Melissa, continuity and what's on camera is so incredibly important. You've got eight people looking at the screen for specks of dust on the floor. Because the viewers pick apart the show so much that if something's left out in the open that's not supposed to be there, we've messed up in a sense.
Right.
And it's going to throw you guys off, unless it's intentionally put there to throw you guys off.
And you never know.
Yeah. And then you get other sets. Klondike was one I did. That was just a day job for me. But you've got three cameras shooting you at once, and you've got X amount of extras stood in front of you, and there's so much stuff going on around you. It doesn't feel as personal.
Mm-hmm.
Haunting Melissa felt extremely personal for me because it's such a, you know, it's POV most of the time.
Right.
So that makes it even more personal. And you go on the journey with Farley. You don't, it's like you kind of leave the overall storyline for half a second even to just follow Farley into the darkness of what is Haunting Melissa.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah.
Just very rare. And Klondike, that also, so the small world, Greg was on that too, right?
Yes, he was. I mean, I wasn't on set with him because right. I was on set for about 8 hours or something like that. It's just a day job speech thingy. Yeah. But like I said, Haunting Melissa is just really, really personal. And the way it's shot too, like it's so intentional. Everything involved in the script and the cinematography and yeah, and I mean you've got script supervisors, right? And they'll tell you when you're paraphrasing and stuff like that because it doesn't give you much wiggle room because you gotta say what's on the page, otherwise you're misleading people.
Right.
And I think that's how it differs from other productions. It's not as other productions. You have to sit down and watch it, and there you go. You've sat down for an hour and a half, and you've watched it. Now it's over, and
yeah,
continue on.
This is something you're watching for months and months after.
Yeah, this is extremely, I want to say, groundbreaking what Neil's done. I mean, you turn it into an app and you say, quick, everyone, dissect the crap out of my work. It's scary, but it's new and it's awesome. You know, yeah. It's terrifying for an actor because when you got to be so precise in your decisions, you're always, you know, actors are forever self-analyzing.
Sure.
And then when you get how many other people picking apart your performance bit by bit, extremely rewarding but terrifying at the same time.
Yes. I can totally see, I can imagine the stress, especially after coming out with Haunting Melissa, and so people have seen it, you've gotten the reaction, you see how much people want to pick things apart, and now you've got dark hearts, and you know that there's a lot of eyes looking at every second of the movie. And your intention is for them to do that, and you've put in little controls so you can go frame by frame, and like, so you really, everything has to be exactly the way you want it.
Yeah, for sure. And that throws another challenge at the cast and crew too, that everything has to be like that.
Right.
It pushes the best out of people.
Yeah, which, that's a good thing for sure.
It's a very, very good thing. And again, you've got to applaud Neil for doing that.
Yes, absolutely. I think he did get just amazing performances out of everyone, and an amazing script and story out of Andrew Klavan. And I don't know, everything about it, kind of top to bottom, from my perspective, is dead on.
Yeah, for sure. It's just everything that's put in there it's placed there for a purpose. Mm. Like, there's no vague, well, I mean, there's no vague, but really, no. The story opens questions because it's so inviting. If you know what I mean.
I think I do.
You get so induced into the story that it makes you want to ask questions. And he did that on purpose. Yeah. So everything that's placed in the script and in the show and throughout the acting, it's very, very, you know, like, it's there for a reason. So pay attention.
And it's very engaging, and it makes you think about watching a movie or TV show or anything with a story, and it really changes the way you view those things, because now you're looking around corners. Okay, this person said that, and this is their relationship, but then you're wondering what more is there. Where normally you kind of just take everything as it is and just get to the end of the movie. But now one person says one thing, and you got to pause it, and you got to think to yourself, like, okay, so if they said that, then what does that mean for this? And it just, so many different pieces to put together.
And yeah.
It's my kind of movie, you know.
For sure. Because, I mean, if you're going to sit down for an hour and a half and watch a movie, if you have no questions by the end of the movie, what are you doing watching that movie?
Yeah, it's, you know, such a very limited experience. And you might talk about it one or two times or tell somebody to see it. But after that, it's just kind of a memory where this really just makes you come back over and over again. And I can't tell you how many times I've watched both movies. And, I mean, right after this, I'm doing another podcast episode with Brian Kaplan, and we're going to do chapter 15 and 16. So I've watched those probably 6 times today.
Oh, really?
And I'm making notes, and I'm finding new things, and I'm coming up with new theories, and there's always more. Especially just listening to some of the dialogue after you've gone through the whole movie, and you go back and watch a chapter, and you go, wow, this is completely different. It's almost as if the scene changed when it didn't, because now you have a new perspective on what they talked about.
Yeah, so, exactly. I couldn't agree more.
I think that's what a movie experience really should be. It should be dynamic, and it should be interesting to the, once you find out, once you see the whole story as much as you can, then going back and revisiting it, getting something new out of it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's movies out there where you watch it once and then you watch it a second time and the movie flips upside down. You've got a whole new perspective on it.
Yeah.
There's nothing like this.
Yeah.
This is its own thing. It stands very alone in its category, because I can't think of another show that I've watched where it's this interactive for an audience.
Yeah, I've never been this engaged with anything, and I wish I had been, because it would make shows more interesting. I mean, I think that's part of why shows like Lost were such a big deal, is it was different and it was very engaging and you wanted to be involved with it, but in my opinion, it didn't really go where it should have gone. But, you know, something like
this,
especially taking advantage of mobile technology, because we're all carrying around our phones and stuff like that all the time, so you can be involved with it all the time, anywhere.
Yeah, and I mean, that alone is awesome. is you get to be with the show when you want to be. It's not, you don't have to waste an hour of your time just taking in information and letting it go and just having that and moving on. You can always go further into it if you want to.
Yeah, and sometimes it gets forced on you when you're trying to sleep and all of a sudden some scary voice says something horrible. And you get mad and scared for a minute, and then you remember that means you have a new chapter, and then you get excited and you watch it. It's just,
I'm so excited to watch it.
Yes, I would like to have you on again after you've watched it.
All right, we will do that. I promise.
Excellent. Well, I am gonna start winding this thing down. So I want to thank you very much for being on the show.
No worries. Thank you so much for having me.
Amazing opportunity. Do you have any final words for the fans and the viewers out there? Anything?
Ooh, pressure. I don't know if I do. I would honestly just say keep doing what you're doing. Pick it apart and give us feedback, because the more you give us, the better we are going to be the second time around or the third time around. And the more rewarding it is for everybody involved, especially with you, what you're doing is just incredible, man. Thank you.
Oh, not a problem. I'm glad to have the opportunity to do this kind of thing and actually work, really closely with Neil and, talk to him every day about stuff and being able to talk to the cast and, really get more involved with something that I'm totally obsessed with. And I can find out more and I can... have a deeper connection with it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, because you don't find that everywhere. That's rare.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, once again, thank you for being on the show. Everybody out there, you can follow along with the chapter episodes on itwantstogetout.tumblr.com. If you're listening to this somewhere else besides adarkcompanion.com, you can go to adarkcompanion.com. That'll take you right to the Podomatic page, where you can see all the podcast episodes and subscribe through there. There's also a PayPal donation button, which I want to thank. We've got our first donation just the other day, so thank you very much for supporting the show. That helps us keep going and also get guests like Mr. Campbell there. So you can follow me on Twitter at Dark Companion or at A Public Witness, either one. And that is the show. Ron, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
All right, you have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.